Welcome back to the Hawks Talk Podcast, your source for everything about the Upper Valley Nighthawks and the NECBL. This is Season 3, Episode 7, Show Me the Data. I'm your host, Phoebe Winters, joined by co-host Caitlin Beal and our public address announcer, Greg Fennell. Caitlin, Greg, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. Neither of us wants to go first, but I'm doing good. I can't believe the semester is almost over. So I'm gonna be leaving London soon, which is sad. I've a week left, actually. So it's flown by.
I'm
Definitely
seeing
agree.
signs of spring out here. There's a forsythia in our backyard that has started to bloom. Stuff is starting to come out of the ground, and the yard is starting to turn green. So there is hope for northern New England. I'm going to have some fun next week. My wife and I are driving south. We're going to catch up with some of our former players at a couple of sites, and that's just going to make the summer feel that much closer. So we're getting there. It's going to be a while, but we're getting there.
Yeah, definitely. Only a few more weeks before we're in Vermont, which just feels so surreal. It's come up so fast.
I know the season is just around the corner. We're about 46 days away from opening night. But what are you guys most excited about for the start of the season?
It's just it's a fun activity to have the Nighthawks around here. Having lived up here for almost 40 years, sometimes summers could be a little bit dull if you're not into hiking or camping or fishing or anything along those lines. From a sports standpoint, about the only thing from a coverage standpoint back in the writing days was either covering golf tournaments or maybe Legion baseball. So there really wasn't as much here as during the high school season, during the Dartmouth season. Having the Nighthawks here gives you something to pay attention to every night, most every night, for the better part of 2 months in between when high school and Dartmouth end to within a couple of weeks when high school and Dartmouth start up again. It's filled a nice void. And I've told this to people before that I see over at Dartmouth, where Dartmouth is a nice thing to have, but it isn't necessarily something that unifies the entire Upper Valley community. And the high schools are the same thing. You've got your Hanovers, you got your Lebanons, you got your Hartfords, you got your other schools, but they don't unify the whole. The Nighthawks have kind of made that less of a concern by drawing people from all over the place to come and see baseball, which people like to do up here. I mean, you got your dyed-in-the-wool Red Sox fans, probably because of the fact that A, they have a fantastic history, but B, they're a sign that we don't always freeze ourselves off for the entire year, maybe half of the year. But the time when it's nice out to be able to play baseball is the best time of the year to be around here.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I'm probably most excited for actually being in a routine and getting to know like the same program and the same team for an extended period of time. Because all the work I've done in the past in athletics has been at BU, and you're jumping around from different teams every week. So you could have like basketball and hockey all in the same week, both men and women's. So you don't really get a chance to like get in a routine, and it changes week by week, but I'm excited for this because we can really get to know the team we're working with, all the other interns, and all the staff. So I think it'll be good to, feel the community that everyone keeps raving about with the Upper Valley.
No, definitely. Having worked it with summer baseball last season, it was just so much fun. So I'm definitely excited to return to summer baseball. And like you said, like that routine of really getting to know the players so well and being around a team of interns, it's definitely a lot of fun. So I'm excited for the season to kick off. Now, the Nighthawks are going to be led by field manager Matt Paws, who's in his sixth season with the Nighthawks. But before he was the Nighthawks field manager, he served as the hitting coach alongside former field manager Justin Devoid, who was the field manager in 2021 and 2022. And in 2021, the Nighthawks made their first ever appearance in the NECBL Final Four. And here to share a little bit more about that experience, we have Justin Devoid. Justin is a minor league hitting coach with the Cleveland Guardians. And in 2021 and 2022, he was the manager of the Upper Valley Nighthawks. Welcome to the podcast, Justin. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Phoebe. Thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you taking the time in your busy schedule to carve out an interview for the podcast. So you're a minor league hitting coach with the Cleveland Guardians. Can you tell our audience a little bit more about your role with the Guardians?
Yeah, so I got hired on in July last year to be an intern down here in the DR to kind of learn how our organization works and try to get my foot in the door somewhere. And so got hired back on in the fall, and I've been minor league hitting coach working a bunch of camps. So we usually have two off-season camps. I got to work about 10 weeks in Arizona with our hitting department to kind of get to know everyone a little bit better and our philosophies and how we want to go about teaching hitting and coaching the players. So now down here, I'll be a lead hitting coach on one of our teams down here with our young international signees.
That's awesome. So, what has been your biggest takeaway from this new role with the Guardians?
Just how much there is to learn in the game. You know, I've been coaching for about 7 to 8 years now, and every day in this game, you learn something new. So it's been a pretty interesting process to go through, you know, the interviews with Cleveland, and then just like meeting all the other hitting coaches, all the staff, and all of the teammates that we have within the org, and just learning from all the different people. I think that's been probably the coolest part, is everyone helps everybody in the organization, and it's pretty fun to be a part of every day.
So you have experience being a coach for collegiate teams for collegiate summer ball and then now for minor league ball. What is the biggest difference in your coaching role between the three organizations?
I think the biggest thing is probably support, right? You know, you start at the high school, college levels, and there's, you know, two to three people on a coaching staff. And, you know, with Cleveland, it seems like everyone's a part of it, even though, you know, you're part of a team, but we'll have six coaches on our staff just with the DSL team here. And we have two teams here. So that's, you know, at least 12 coaches in the building. And then when you get to the spring training facilities, everybody's there. And everyone kind of helps each other. So I think in that regard, there's a little bit more support, and obviously resources depending on the level that you're at. But as far as like players go, players are players, no matter what level. So, you know, you have to figure out how to teach, how to coach each individual. And, you know, I don't think that changes throughout the levels.
Well, I want to take it back to your time at Upper Valley. During your first season as the manager of the Nighthawks, you led the team to their first ever NECBL Final Four appearance and then to second in the Northern Division. Can you tell us a little bit about what that moment felt like for you?
Yeah, it was a blast. That summer was really fun. We had a fun coaching staff with Big Chad. But then also we had just had some really good players who had a lot of experience. So a lot of older guys on that first year team that really knew how to play the game, play it the right way, but then had really good work ethic. So it was really fun to see them kind of transform throughout the summer, but also like summer ball, a lot of people don't know each other at the beginning, and then towards the end, it just seems like a family. So that was a really cool moment. And then, you know, to make it that far in the playoffs was great for us, but the Nighthawks as well, so they could build on that moving forward for the next few years. You know, obviously right after COVID, this season had been lengthened a little bit. So we kind of ran into some trouble in the end, but it was a really, really fun summer.
You mentioned your coaching staff. Matt Paws, who's the current general manager of the Nighthawks, was a part of that staff. What can you say about working with him and his coaching style?
Posse's great. I've known Matt for, I don't want to age myself too much, but probably like 15 plus years. We played ball together in high school. I communicated with him a lot when we were growing up. We played men's league together. So I've always wanted to coach with Matt. And then to have him come on board for my second year as a hitting coach was really great. Because again, another good baseball mind from where we grew up. So we're kind of like a close-knit community with that. And so I was telling Noah from the get-go, like, got to get Posse on board. He's right in our backyard. We should grab him.
And then, what would you say was your proudest moment working with the Nighthawks?
Let's see. I think it's seeing the players be successful now, you know, whether it's, you know, a good example is obviously Allen playing really well for the Blue Jays right now, but all the other players who have been drafted or picked up by major league teams, or even guys who didn't end up going to pro ball but have good careers and seems like, they're making all the right steps in their lives. I think that's probably the most rewarding part. And then trying to like follow along with guys and stay in touch with them as the years kind of go on.
Now, summer ball is obviously a lot different from working with a collegiate team all season long or even working with a minor ball league team. What's kind of the biggest challenge when approaching a summer ball coaching position?
I think the biggest one is making sure that, you're communicating with those players' coaches throughout the summer. Because obviously, like, we're not there in the summer to make big changes in their, mechanics or anything like that. It's more or less like a teaching moment for them to get some extra games, for them to kind of get more at bats. Maybe guys didn't get too many at bats during the season. But to create a good, fun environment for them to kind of grow on their own and kind of give them the tools, and the path to kind of go, and let them kind of take it on their own, kind of drive their own car, so to speak.
And what makes the Upper Valley Nighthawks special?
It's special to me because in our community, we didn't have much, at least when I was growing up, you could go to Lake Monsters games or, Red Sox games, Fisher Cats. But again, like in Hartford, Queechy, Vermont, those are pretty far drives, I guess. Like an hour to Burlington is not too bad, but still, to have this, high level baseball right in your backyard, I think is super important for our community to go and watch some really good players that maybe, hey, like I had this kid stay at my house for a summer and now he's playing for X team and we still communicate with him. And my son, who was 6 years old, is like his biggest fan. So I think it creates more of a baseball community for us. And then also like being a part of the team in 2016 for the first year as a player was really cool, for myself and like my family. And so I think to give some more kids in our area that opportunity, I think is wonderful.
Awesome. And then obviously you're in the midst of minor league ball right now. What's going to be your biggest goal for this season?
I mean, from like an organizational standpoint and like myself and hitting, I want my guys to be able to get off the island and get to the States. I think a big goal is to attack the plan that we're trying to teach as far as our organizational goals and philosophies, but also like get these guys to improve upon their skills that they already have at such a young age so that they can keep developing the right way. And their dream is to get off the DR and get into Arizona and move up. So hopefully we can do that with a decent amount of players.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Justin, for joining me on the podcast today. I appreciate you taking the time, and I hope to check in with you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Phoebe. I appreciate it. I hope the summer's really fun and you guys get some fun players and get a lot of fans at the games.
Now let's take it back to the upcoming season. With the 2025 season fast approaching, we are beginning to see a little bit more of an accurate roster. Our social media team recently posted an introduction to a few of those players on the 2025 roster, including returner Cal Culpepper. So Cal's a sophomore at Southern Miss, and he was a part of the Nighthawks bullpen last season, during which he made 7 appearances and 1 start and posted a 5.14 ERA. Caitlin, Greg, what do you guys like so far about Cal's game at Southern Miss, and what do you think he'll bring to the Nighthawks bullpen this season?
I think Cal has had quite the opportunity this season that I think that he expected. It's not uncommon for Southern Miss to redshirt their freshman pitchers right out of high school so that their first opportunity of post-high school competition is summer baseball. And when Cal was here, and he stayed with my wife and me here at the house, he showed me that he had starter capability, but wasn't able to stay for the entire summer. He had a wisdom tooth issue. He was hence only stayed for about a month and didn't get the entire benefit of the summer. Then you take a look at the limited action he's seen with Southern Miss this year, and the numbers are fairly similar. He had issues with control. He had issues with giving up a lot of hits last year. His WHIP was right around 2, which is obviously way too high for what you want to see. And for the limited time that he's played for Southern Miss this year, those numbers have been kind of in the same place. Also, he just got in his first action, an inning against Southeastern Louisiana this past Tuesday night, which was his first game action in the better part of 5 or 6 weeks. So I don't think you can really get an accurate gauge on what you can expect out of him. But the nice thing is he knows what being in the Nighthawks organization is like. He's comfortable with the scenario, and he's also a very sociable guy. He will become instant friends with everybody he gets along with on this team, and hence you can't help but getting dragged into the vortex that is Cal Culpepper, because he is a very sociable guy. So I'm looking forward to seeing more from him this year. We got a little bit of a taste of it last year. We know what he needs to work on. He's got good velocity. He'll throw in the low 90s. We'll hopefully have a full summer to see him progress and maybe give us a little more than the tease that we got last summer.
Yeah, I have to echo a lot of what Greg said. I mean, there isn't much to go off of both from last summer and from this season so far. He's appeared in 4 games this season, but what Greg spoke about his character, clearly he will put in the work and he wants to improve and get that experience that he hasn't had so far. So I think overall he'll be a good member of the team and can definitely make some good friends and kind of usher in the new players who haven't been here before, kind of show them the ropes and just kind of be more of a mentor figure for them.
I think the one catch with Cal was last year, since he was redshirted and wasn't going to be playing for Southern Miss in the NCAA postseason at all, he was able to be here for the start of the year. In fact, the funny thing was, he came up with his dad. The other two guys who stayed with us were going to be later because they were both involved in NCAA play. And they got up here at a time when our neighbors from across the street were holding a barbecue for a couple that was moving to another house. They invited Cal and his dad over, so they got a big taste of what the neighborhood was like. This year, though, even though he's not pitching very much, I would suspect that he's not going to be here until the middle of June, whenever Southern Miss's season is done. And the way they're playing right now, they could be going on a deep run. They're one of the best teams in the Sun Belt Conference. They've been top 25 most of the year in the NCAA polls. Their RPI is exceptional. They're going to the NCAAs. The question for them is whether they're going to end up hosting regionals and possibly super regionals if they're that good. So we're gonna have to wait a little longer until Cal gets here this year, I think.
Well, Cal isn't the only Golden Eagle that's going to be coming to the Upper Valley this summer. Freshman pitcher Micah Wascom is also going to be a part of the Nighthawks bullpen. What have you guys liked about Micah's season at Southern Miss so far?
All the games that my wife and I have listened to, and we listen to a lot of the Golden Eagle games on the internet, I think I've heard Micah's name called once. He's in that situation of the typical freshman at a Division I baseball school. Even though he wasn't redshirted as a freshman, he's only getting limited opportunities. So again, it's the same situation that we had with Cal basically last year. Didn't know what to expect. Know he came from a good program. From what I've heard, and I believe I might have gotten this from Cal's dad, Micah is also a very sociable guy, a very good teammate. So he should fit in easily. And I think there's a level of comfort when you come up to a strange area with somebody you know. Then we'll have the added benefit of Cal knowing what it's like to live in the house here. So we'll know more about Micah when he gets here, because I don't see him getting a lot of action for Southern Miss down the road. And whether or not he shows up for the start of the season, I think is going to be more up to Coach Christian Ostrander down at Southern Miss than it is to the fact that he didn't get redshirted.
Are these guys going to be staying with you again this year, Greg?
They are. Yeah. We have sort of become the unofficial northern branch of the Southern Miss baseball fan club. Once we realized how easy it was to listen to the games, we pay a lot of attention to what it's like. And it's fun. I mean, I not just because it's Southern Miss. The Nighthawks have made me more interested in college baseball than I ever was before. So now, on any given evening, like last night, I've got the Capitals on the TV, but the sound's down, so we can listen to the Southern Miss game on the computer. That'll probably happen again tonight, and it'll probably happen 3 dozen more times before the college season gets done. It's fun to identify with a program. Even though they may not know we identify with a program, it's kind of fun from our perspective.
Yeah, definitely cool too
Cool
to,
too.
get the inside, kind of scoop on them with them living with you and really get to know them personally. You'll definitely. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned you listened to their game last night, during which they won 8-1. They're currently 26-12 on the season. Do you have a score prediction for the rest of their series with Georgia Tech, with Georgia State?
I would not be surprised to see, well, I could see one of two things happening. I could see a sweep because they've played that well lately. Now, please allow me a moment of host parent braggage. Okay. An ex-Nighthawk who stayed with us last summer, Nick Bonastere, on Sunday, I believe, had a 3-for-5, 2-home-run, 7-RBI game down at Texas State. Southern Miss was trying to go for a series sweep down in San Marcos, but the relief pitching failed in the last two innings and they got walked off on back-to-back bases loaded hit by pitches. So I think by Tuesday, their derrieres were burning a little bit when they were at Southeastern Louisiana. They struggled, trailed most of the game. Top of the ninth inning, they're down 7-4, two outs. Nick Bonastere, ex-Shea Fengraff graduate, at the plate and turned a 7-4 deficit into an 8-7 win with a grand slam that capped off now what was. I did the math the other day here. I think he batted 5-for-11, 4 home runs, 13 runs batted in 2 games. He followed that up with a solo home run in the game against Georgia State last night. So Nick is on a tear. And another post-parent brag, Matthew Russo, who was also up here last summer, bats behind him in the Southern Miss order, had a 3-run home run last night. So I could see them sweeping, but they also seem to let their foot off the gas sometimes on those Sunday games, or in this case, Saturday games. So getting a sweep is not going to be a guarantee. They also got swept at Georgia State last year. I think that was the only time all year that they got swept in a Sun Belt series. So I could see them taking this, given how well they're playing right now. They're really hitting the ball well. It's the pitching that sometimes comes into question, especially at the back end.
Well, assessing a player's performance from a stat sheet can be pretty difficult, but let's hear from an expert on crunching the numbers. We have former Nighthawks Director of Analytics and current University of Miami's Director of Analytics, Jack Olszewski. Jack, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. So, Jack, can you tell us a bit more about what your role as the Director of Baseball Analytics entails?
So my job here at the University of Miami, I collect all of the data that we use. So we've got a whole bunch of different fund systems that we use to collect a lot of fund data. And then I analyze that and present it in reports to the coaches and the players. We focus on player development, we focus on opponent preparation, and we focus on player acquisition. So a lot of stuff in the transfer portal. So a lot of our work is done. We have a TrackMan system, which I know the Nighthawks also have. And that's a big part of a lot of our work. We get it for us, and then we're part of the TrackMan data sharing portal. So we get it for the rest of the country as well, which is a huge benefit in being able to do opponent evaluations and transfer portal work. We have a system called Kenetrax, which we got new this year, which is a fancy 17-camera system, which focuses on the pitcher and batter and records nice, really high-speed camera and allows us to do some cool biomechanics work. And to evaluate player movement. So I work with we've got a biomechanist that we've been working closely with. And so that's one of the next frontiers of the game is being able to understand movement patterns and the kinesiology behind that. And we're one of the few schools that has a program like that. So we've been really on the forefront of all of that, which has been very exciting. And then we have a couple other systems that we use, and we capture data from them, and we do some full analysis with that as well. But that all helps this team win games. Yeah, that's the goal.
That's awesome. And you're currently with the University of Miami. What have you liked most about working with the Miami Hurricanes?
I mean, it's fun. I get to come. I'm currently inside the ballpark, and I get to come and be inside the ballpark and have an office inside the ballpark every day, which is hugely fun. And spend my days just out here in the sun watching people play baseball. It is great. And I just love baseball so much, and being able to be around it and just head first deep into it is really excellent. And it's a great atmosphere down here in Miami. Beautiful weather, and you get to they we have famous baseball milkshakes, which are really good as well. So,
A baseball milkshake. What's in the baseball milkshake?
well, we've got a milkshake stand at the ballpark, which serves all different fancy milkshakes, and they're all very tasty.
That sounds awesome. We definitely don't have that in Blacksburg, but we have Dippin' Dots outside the softball park.
No, and I mean they rival Maple Creamies. Maple Creamies.
No,
Max Maple.
nothing
I
beats maple
no,
creamies.
no, I know, I know. Nothing beats Maple Creamies, but it's good to have a baseball milkshake.
That sounds awesome. I'm definitely jealous. But before you started working with the Hurricanes, you worked with the MLB's data quality department. How would you say working with a college team is different from your experience with the MLB?
So, I mean, the focus with a college team is to help win games. With the data quality department, a lot of it was making sure the data is correct, which is a big part of my job here as well. But that was more to support all 30 major league teams and to build stuff that was exciting for public recognition. So it there was some stuff there where you were less doing stuff because, hey, I think that'll help a team win games, but hey, that'd be cool for people to see, or hey, that'd be cool to put on the All-Star game broadcast or something like that. And also I did that job remotely, so this is being able to be in person and at the ballpark has been a huge, huge great piece.
And then while you were working with the MLB, you helped usher in the Hawkeye bat tracking system. Can you kind of explain what that technology does and how that data impacts the game?
Yeah, so that was their first year of having bat tracking data. They had gotten a sample from two organizations. So we were able to be the first people in MLB to see this really neat, high quality bat speed data and be the first to understand bat speed. Kinetrax has had a similar product out for a while, but this was the first from the official MLB Hawkeye stuff. So the bat tracking stuff that they've released to the public last year, that we were able to be the first to see that and to build out some of those basic metrics, bat speed, attack angle, swing length, and all of the cool stuff that's currently being absorbed into the public. We were able to be the first on that and work a lot and fix the various bugs that come with implementing a new system and design cool metrics that are used internally and then made their way out to the public.
And then you have a special connection with the Nighthawks. You spent a summer as their director of analytics. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience working with the Nighthawks?
Yeah, so I spent 5 years as the scorekeeper. And some of those, I think I was also technically the director of analytics. I'm not totally sure. I did analytics the whole time. So that was excellent. I grew up in the Upper Valley. And so I had contacted, I've been talking with Noah even before the Nighthawks were a thing. When he was just thinking of moving from Winnipesaukee down to start the Nighthawks. And I was at the initial launch for the Nighthawks. I think Greg, you were there too, I would assume. And I spent a couple years working with the team and helping build up the whole everything, starting from, I mean, the first year I was there, I was using my laptop's webcam to record the broadcasts, because the person who was supposed to do broadcast dropped out, and helped was part of seeing the Nighthawks build into this really cool, really tech savvy organization where they are today, where you've got a cool podcast and they're hosting the All-Star game and they're playing games on ESPN Plus. It's really cool to see how they've progressed and to be a part of that in some way. But I spent a lot of really great time at the ballpark, and especially I spent a lot of it with my little brother, who would do the music and the walk-up songs for years. And that was really great. And then I got to go up to the press box and annoy the hell out of Greg.
And you did a very
Try
good
to
job of it. By the way, the Deuces are still not wild, nor will they be this season.
I'm going to figure out how to do it. But yeah, trying to make Greg say the Deuces are wild has been a large part of what I've done over the past couple of years.
Hey,
A little
Greg, I think
bit.
you have some questions.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Tell me a little bit about growing up in the Upper Valley. I mean, you and your brother are Thetford kids, correct?
Norwich.
Norwich, okay. You know from experience how hard it is to launch a baseball season around here. How do you get a passion for baseball growing in a place where it is so hard to get it going every given spring and in a time when the season is so short?
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of people up there that really love baseball and really love watching the Red Sox. I think it's often harder if you are wanting to be really serious about playing baseball, given the difficulty of starting everything up. But I was always much more of an athlete than an athlete. But yeah, no, I fell in love with the game from a very early age and playing Little League and watching the Red Sox and just reading as much about the game as I could. And I was able to pair that with my math skills. And in the age of Moneyball, I was able to see avenues where people who loved baseball but didn't necessarily have those kind of great athletic abilities, but loved the game and were quite good at math, could make waves into the game, and you could understand the game from almost an academic pursuit, and kind of study it religiously, and understand more and more and peel back layers of the onion. And so that's something I've loved doing since a kid. And I get to do it today. I get to build different models. I just finished building a model where I looked at outfielder range, and which outfielders can get to the most fly balls. I finished that a couple minutes ago. But you get to understand different levels of baseball and how everything works and how you can understand what puts together and makes a team win games. And being able to do that is something I fell in love with at a very young age, and it's really cool.
Kind of walked into my next question. When I think of analytics, math obviously comes to mind. I'm somebody whose brain fried on math and eighth grade algebra. I've not been able to function ever since. So
Right.
where did this interest in math come from? And tell me a little bit about the educational background that you have that most applies to what you do now.
Yeah, so I mean, I've always loved math from a young age as well, math and statistics specifically. So my background, I got my undergrad in data science at the University of Vermont. I'm currently on the side. I'm pursuing my master's in data science here at the University of Miami while working. I've done previous work outside of baseball and statistical consulting. So I worked for a healthcare education company. I did some stuff with Dartmouth with their Masters of Public Health program. I worked for a property valuation company doing some statistics. Yeah, so and there's a lot of cool stuff I do with moving towards machine learning and artificial intelligence. That's the way a lot of the stuff is going. And it's really important to have very good statistical models and a good statistical understanding of everything as well. And then being able to code, I do everything in Python, which is a programming language. But you're able to build out a lot of really good stuff and really manipulate data in a way that allows you to get some really good insights.
Where do you see this taking you 5, 10, 15 years down the road? What would you like to be doing as you get older?
So at some point, I would love to move into a major cheerleading organization. I think that's would be a great next step. I don't know. I really love it here at Miami, so I'm not in any rush to leave. But doing something similar at a major league organization, I mean, again, this is really what I love to do. So just doing it in a place where I get access to even more data and have more fun with all of it.
We can't let you go without getting a scouting report on Miami. We've just gotten past about the halfway point of the college baseball season. How's the season gone for the Hurricanes, a program that obviously has significant NCAA history? And within the context of the ACC, how are the Hurricanes doing and how far do you see them going this year?
So our season started a little rough with some tough losses, but we've been on a nice winning streak. So at the time we're recording it, we just completed two straight series wins. We beat Pitt and we beat Duke at home, which was a big win. And we got Georgia Tech later today. So ideally we can keep things going and make a nice deep run. Yeah, but it's a tough ACC. There's a lot of good teams in there. So we're trying, but we'll see as far as we can get.
I was curious how you mentioned AI. How does that kind of play into your role? And also, are you embracing it? Is there a little bit of fear regarding it? Like, what's kind of your mindset on it?
So with artificial intelligence, a big thing I want to do is be able to apply it with the proper amount of respect and with the prop and responsibly. So a lot of that is making sure that I understand whatever models I'm building, and understand whatever I'm giving to the coaches. So there's a lot of the AI stuff that can be done almost black boxy, where you give it some input and you have no clue what it does, and it gives you some magic output. And anything that feels too much like magic is a little scary. So with all of that stuff, I like to do it, but do it conservatively, and do it in parallel with being in classes about this and taking and reading a lot about it and studying it to the point where I can not make any rash decisions. It's moving in a way that more and more is going to be done with artificial intelligence. But there's also places where it has significant gaps currently. And so understanding what it can do and what it can't do, and when you get some output, what is going into it, and how is it getting from point A to point B, which is often very difficult with artificial intelligence. So applying it conservatively, but trying to understand it.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And then with all this new technology and understanding statistics, how do you see this type of technology and knowing this type of information about your players, about the teams? How do you see this impacting the future of baseball?
So it's already had a huge, huge impact on baseball, and it's continuing to grow. There's a lot of cool stuff where we're able to, I mean, the quality of baseball has just improved so drastically as we better understand how players can play and where they can improve. And you've seen swings back and forth as pitching has gained a lot of juice, and now hitting's coming back with stuff like the torpedo bats. And other innovations that have helped the hitting swing back. I think there's a lot. The biomechanics sphere is one of the next new layers of stuff, where you can better understand pitching mechanics and ideally, though it's really difficult to do, cut down on some of these arm injuries that we've been seeing, but having a better understanding of how the body reacts to different stressors put on it and where the stressors are coming from, that's going to be a huge help going forward. And then stuff like the high speed bat and ball tracking. There's been a lot of cool stuff in the past couple of years with the high speed ball tracking and understanding spin and movement and how you can create different types of shapes by moving the ball weird and playing with the air resistance and cool, really cool physics stuff. And there's a lot that you can do with the new bat tracking stuff and understanding swing planes and understanding how to best attack certain type of pitches. There's a lot of really cool layers that are they're still coming down the pipe. And baseball is going to continue to evolve, and it's going to continue to be a place where really good, really smart people work and are able to build things that help the whole world.
Those are definitely some really interesting points, especially about injuries. That would be really cool to help kind of lessen some of those, maybe, or, that would be really cool.
It's really the injury stuff is really hard. We're working on it, but it's that's something that the whole field has is still progressing on.
Hope so, because it just at the pro level, it almost seems like we've gotten to a point where pitchers are considered expendable. If you can't throw 95 with a lot of movement and then your arm breaks down, you just get thrown to the side and the next guy gets brought in. I'd like to see a situation where these injuries can not be fatal, so to speak, to a career.
Yeah, so part of that is there's definitely some programs that they push velocity. Some of these training programs push velocity as the be all and end all, which it may not be. And so there's some places that I don't know if they do it in a super responsible way. We're trying to do everything in a responsible way to avoid having these injuries, and to do it in a smart way. It's really tough, and especially any rule changes that have been floated, as right now people are trying their hardest and are going for the peak performance, which is putting a lot of strain on their body, and anything that says, hey, you've got to limit your peak performance is something that's going to diminish the quality of the game. And that's going to be really hard. So understanding, continuing to do research into understanding how to make these arms more durable and how to make stuff. And there's been a lot of progress, but again, it's still slow, and some of the progress in the other areas has been quicker. And has been optimizing, saying that there's optimal things that are putting more strain on your arm. So,
All right. Well, I just have one last question for you, Jack. Based on your experience with the Nighthawks, what makes the Upper Valley special?
I love coming there. I love coming to the ballpark and getting some maple creamies and watching a game and spending time with a lot of people that I care about there. And I care about everybody with those Nighthawks programs, and Matt and Noah and Greg and everyone, Ray, everyone who's up there in the press box. And we've always got a good class of interns that are always really fun to spend time with. And it's a really, really special experience. And I'm glad I'm gonna come back. I think I'm the scorer for the All-Star game. I'll have to check with Matt on that. But I will definitely be back around the ballpark because the Upper Valley is a really special place, and it's where I grew up, and it's where I really love to spend my time.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, Jack. Enjoy the rest of your day. Good luck with the Georgia Tech series later today. We really appreciate you coming on to the podcast.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And with that will conclude season 3, episode 7 of the Hawks Talk podcast, Show Me the Data. A huge thank you to Justin Devoid and Jack Olszewski for joining us. And thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode. Caitlin, Greg, and I have a lot of excitement planned for the podcast this season. I want to thank Caitlin Beal and Greg Fennell for joining me on the podcast. I'm Phoebe Winters, and this has been the Hawks Talk Podcast.